17. Mahomes takes it down the line. It's straight option pitch. Pacheco on the edge from the 8. Mahomes on the run. Kelce in the middle. Kelce touchdown. And Lawrence lofting it for Kirk. Got it for the touchdown. Christian Kirk on terrific play design. From out of the backfield to the end zone. And the Jaguars respond and tie the game.
Patrick saw the play clock running down. Got to this one quick. Hangs on for that very last second to complete it. And it's a gain of 4 yards on that one for Blake Bell. And Mahomes may have been shaken up as he was taken down. Uh-oh. Grabbed that right ankle right away. And in a lot of pain.
Pacheco in a foot race to the sideline. Pacheco out of bounds at the 5-yard line. And Kelce in the end zone for another touchdown. First and goal. Etienne bouncing the outside. Cuts it up and in for the touchdown. Travis Etienne has made this a 4-point game.
Go, go.
And Mahomes steps up, throws to the back. Touchdown. Marquez Valdez Scantling. Going quick from the 9. Gets it out. Agnew at the 5. Oh. Lost the football. 3 in the pile. 4 Chiefs are there. Pretty much the ball game on this recovery. Kansas City has it. But one more time, it's Kansas City playing for the AFC Championship.
Second down and 8. First pass play from Jalen Hurts, who's well protected. Wank Smith, perfectly thrown. Inside the 35 as Smith beat Adoree Jackson for 32 yards. Third down and 5. Hurts will look to throw. He's got Goddard with a one-handed catch. Bayless Goddard in. Touchdown, Philadelphia. Bubble screen. Devontae Smith got a block. Got a touchdown. Eagles making it look easy. Austin Scott has been a giant killer in his career, trying to do it to him one more time. He is in. Boston Scott, another touchdown against the Giants. Second and goal. A juggle of the snap. Hurts found it, and there's the end zone ahead for another Philadelphia touchdown. Gainwell trying to get around the edge, and Kenneth Gainwell explodes all the way for another touchdown. Philadelphia is going to head to the NFC Championship game for the first time since their Super Bowl winning season. They sweep the Giants in 3 games this year. They've beaten them 10 games in a row here in Philadelphia, and they left no questions unanswered tonight.
Welcome to halftime of the NFL Divisional Round. Half the field for the Championship Sunday has been set, and each participating team has a Kelce brother. I'm Jeff Meller, along with Brian Hanley. Highlights you heard there, courtesy of NBC and Fox late last night as the Chiefs punched their ticket, beating the Jaguars at home despite quite a bit of drama in that one. And, of course, in one that had far less drama, the nightcap, the Eagles just thoroughly boat raced the New York Giants. And so we have ourselves some reaction to that. And, of course, we'll be previewing the other games today, which has the Bengals and Bills squaring off for that other AFC spot. And, of course, in a matchup that has lots and lots of history to it, the Cowboys will take on the 49ers in a game that will square those two off for the 9th time in playoff history, which will tie the record for most times teams have met in the playoffs. Brian, instant reaction to yesterday's affair.
Well, spent a lot of last night, a lot of the second half of the later game wondering, what was the most impressive thing I watched yesterday? And if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I guess you're spoiled for choice. I mean, was it Mahomes gutting it out and coming back? And that, I mean, that Kansas City offense is just so damn efficient, no matter who's it. I mean, Chad Henne can lead you. And I know he's handing the ball off, but a 98-yard drive, I mean, he just comes in and that they just get it done, right? Yep. When they're all holding their collective breath, wondering what Patrick Mahomes is going to look like. And, you know, the fact that he came back and was, you know, efficient enough and got it done, it's a high ankle sprain, Jeff. So, you know, today I wonder how he's feeling, because a lot of times that's more painful than a break, because you can set a break, right?
Yep.
But we'll see how it moves forward. But, I mean, was it the Eagles' defensive line? Was it their offensive line? I mean, I guess I'm leaning towards the offensive line, even though the defense – I woke up feeling like Daniel Jones today.
That's not a good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What was the most impressive thing you saw? Because, again, the Eagles just look like they've got it all going on. And both sides of the ball and both sides of the line, it's just so damn impressive.
I think my initial thought is that what you laid out, and this is something I'd like to get into later in the show, perhaps the blueprint that the Bears can follow here. But I think the Eagles' offensive line, to me, when I really look at everything that played out yesterday, that was, for me, the most impressive display that was put on. They just threw the Giants around. The Giants never had a chance. They didn't seem to know what to do with the different run options that the Eagles showed them. And they ran all of them to the point where by the time we had even reached halftime of that game and you knew it was over, it was 28 to nothing.
Yeah.
And there was no question.
There was no Jacksonville comeback collapse going. Yeah.
And I don't think there was no way, no how anybody saw that in the cards. You definitely could see that the Eagles were thoroughly in control and dominating that one. So it was just a matter of how long would the second half take, because clearly the Philadelphia Eagles approached it vastly differently than the Chargers did last week. They knew how to run out the clock to never give the Giants an opportunity to even be involved in that one. But, and you mentioned too, though, Mahomes, that's going to be the story all week, right? Like what looks like a high ankle sprain is going to be something we're going to be hearing about and monitoring all day. Adam Schefter let everybody know on Twitter that Patrick Mahomes would be having an MRI today, and so they'll try and look into it and see what happens. But you're right. The swelling now is going to be something that you wonder exactly what Patrick Mahomes is going to look like next Sunday, because let's be honest, he was, after that first drive, first of all, let's not neglect that. It was sensational. The Chiefs came out and looked, to your point, like that is a machine. Yeah. And when Patrick Mahomes is driving it, forget about it. When they're going well, it's impossible to stop. And remember, this is, everybody knows this, but at this point, what they're doing without Tyreek Hill, who last year you wondered if the offense would take a little bit of a step back because of his absence this season, that is not the case. Patrick Mahomes makes that thing hum like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, he's going to have to take one of those bath bomb things that he does in State Farm commercials, get in the hot tub. I just watching that offense, and again, it's just, sometimes it's nickel and dime you down the field, but it looks effortless, right? It just looks like they could wake up in the middle of the night and do that. And, Randy Walker, the great late coach I covered in Northwestern, and other coaches said, a great football team, you could wake them up at 2 a.m. and put them on the parking lot, and they could go out and do what they do on Sundays, right? And that's how it's just no matter who's in there, no matter who they're facing, it's just a thing of beauty. If you like efficient football, they can go deep, they can go short, they go in the middle of the field, they can go around. I mean, and they do it year in, year out. And I know like everyone gets tired of seeing Nick Saban in Alabama doing what they did, and they didn't get a chance to do it this year. But when you see a team like that, it, as a football fan, I really enjoy watching.
Oh, you're so right. When you think about it, for us kind of unbiased observers here, because the Bears are not in the playoffs, so there's no, you know.
We'll get to them.
Yeah, we will, certainly. But, you know, so to watch it, you can just appreciate the beauty that they, as an offense, like you said, when they're out there. And the thing I think of, too, Patrick Mahomes, what he's capable of, like, you know, there's comparisons, guys like Josh Allen, you know, Joe Burrow want to be in that same conversation, or people want to thrust them into the same, you know, same area that Patrick Mahomes is. But the truth is, what he's capable of doing is, it's peerless across the league, because there's no guy in the league who has the mobility that he has when he's right, but also he has such an array of different throws where he can be accurate, and he's never afraid. You know, it seems like we see two or three different ones a game. Even yesterday, Brian, after he had returned to the game with the ankle injury in the fourth quarter, he throws a touchdown pass to Marquez Valdes-Scantling on a jump pass off of his left foot.
Yeah.
When prior in the game, he had thrown a jump pass off of his right foot. And, I mean, it just goes to show you, he is in a class by himself. So it's so much fun to watch. But at the same time, you know, I'm concerned because, yes, this injury that occurred yesterday could certainly shape the playoffs going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. It could, because, again, MRI today, just to see what damage has been done. But high ankle sprains, they could, I mean, they could take 6 to 8 weeks to be 100%. And obviously he doesn't have that kind of time. And you can wrap it up and he can tough it out. And I know everyone's applauding him, and rightfully so, for doing exactly that yesterday. But, you know, if the leg tells him otherwise, he might be at the a minimum limited to what he can do next week, let alone, I mean, he's going to be out there. He's going to give it a go. But yeah, we'll see what that looks like.
Well, and the truth is, we all saw it. We saw it unfold yesterday that he certainly did not want to go to the locker room, but that was certainly not up to him. He spoke with Melissa Stark on NBC after the game.
Clearly did not want to come out of the game. You did not want to go in the locker room in the second quarter. What happened there?
Yeah, I did not want to. I did not want to go, and they kind of gave me the ultimatum of I wasn't going back in unless I went in there. So they're trying to take care of me. We got a lot of great people over here, but it's going to take a lot to keep me out of a football game.
Do you know exactly what the injury is? You said you took x-rays. They were negative.
Yeah, x-rays were negative. They haven't diagnosed anything yet, but I'll be good to go.
His head coach, Andy Reid, after the game.
It would be like me trying to ask you not to ask a question. No, it's a, listen, he's a tough kid. And so he wanted to be in there. He wanted to be competing. And that's, you know, it's a tribute to him and his competitiveness. However, you got to make sure he's okay, physically okay, where he can protect himself. And if he can't, then he can't play. I mean, you have to go with the next guy. But he's a tough nut. And he's very, when I tell you he's competitive, he's very, very competitive.
We all saw that. It was interesting, and you mentioned it. Chad Henne comes off the bench having not completed a pass all season long and then leads a 98-yard drive for a touchdown. That was, I think, really stabilizing for the team because, of course, you see Patrick Mahomes, and they didn't know at that moment whether he would be able to return. But then to have Chad Henne, and you said it, you know, they did rely on the run there, which was good to see the team be able to rely on some other skill players as well.
Well, that's that Matt Nagy thinking right there. You know, he's a step ahead of everybody.
You know what? I did not see Matt Nagy holding a play card. I saw Andy Reid have one. I saw Eric Bieniemy have one. I did not see a cutaway to Matt Nagy holding a play card yesterday.
Why would you even, you know,
I mean, you just never know. I mean, at this point.
Take the weapons away from people who don't know how to use them. But Chad Henne, so I'm watching that. I'm just curious. Do you have any idea how much Chad Henne's made in his career?
Oh, you know what? I think I saw it. I don't want to spoil your little teaser here, but is it somewhere in the neighborhood like $37 million?
Almost 39.
Okay.
I mean, it's good to be a Chad Henne. And you know, it's funny. Andy Reid's like, you have to go to the next guy. It's like he doesn't even know the next guy's name. He didn't say we have to go to Chad.
Right, yes.
But Chad's been doing this, since 2008? And he's still banking. So God bless him.
And it was a revenge game for him because, of course, he came to Kansas City after playing in Jacksonville. That was actually where he got the most significant run in his career way back in 2013 when he was the established starter. Of course, I think to your point about how much he's made, he's found a nice calling as a backup quarterback. I mean, listen, I think I'm not the first. I won't be the last to say it. Best gig in sports if you can be a backup quarterback. Make a very, very long, profitable living doing so.
Yeah, it's too bad Ryan Pace isn't a GM because he likes to give $18 million contracts to backup quarterbacks.
So. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller, 312-332-3776. We're reacting to yesterday's NFL divisional round games. Of course, the Chiefs beating the Jaguars and, of course, Patrick Mahomes gutting it out in that one. And of course, what happened last night too. Interestingly enough, while there wasn't much drama on the field, in the post game coverage, the Eagles head coach might have sparked some of his own drama. We'll share that with you next here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Hanging out with you here on a flurry-filled Sunday morning. Not coming down too hard, but we've definitely got a little bit of a dusting here downtown inside the Old National Bank studio on State Street.
I'm getting nervous, Jeff, because this week you start hearing people talk about, hey, you know, it's been a pretty mild winter.
Right.
And it has. But it's, you know, it's like you're just, you know, testing. You're just challenging the weather gods to let us have it at some point. But, yeah, this is nothing. But you always hold your breath. If you've lived in Chicago your whole life like I have, you know what February can bring a lot of times.
Oh, yeah. I definitely... Once the football season wraps up, and I always cross my fingers and hope that because it's been pushed back now so far into February, the Super Bowl, that is, that I always cross my fingers and hope we can get through, navigate, you know, the first start of February without too much crazy weather. Because obviously, for us here in the old sports talk radio profession, it is a very busy time. So dealing with the inclement weather that can be chaotic at times when you get hit with, you know, feet of snow is always problematic. So I'm with you. Just no need to jinx it. Let's just cross our fingers and hope we can get through with this mild winter. But yeah, not too bad today on the drive.
No, I mean, we're still thawing out from Christmas weekend, you know, from the sub-zero. But yeah, that's really been the only things we had to deal with, right?
Yeah, exactly. So 312-332-3776 if you want to check in and discuss yesterday's playoff action, maybe preview the games today with us, which we will be doing throughout the show. We're also going to check in with Teddy Greenstein about 10:30 as he gets a set with the action today. We'll pick his brain for all the latest line movement, what he wants to share with us, and where he thinks the money should be going today, as, again, the Bengals and Bills kick things off today in Buffalo. And then, of course, the 5:30-ish kickoff between the Cowboys and the 49ers, which I imagine will do a monster rating today, Bri, because the Cowboys,
team, yeah,
they are box office, that is for sure. So I mentioned it as we were heading to break. Philadelphia Eagles really never was in doubt yesterday. As soon as they got the ball, took it down and scored, they set the tone, and the Giants clearly were not playing the Vikings anymore. That was never more apparent than early on in that game. But what was interesting was, of course, everybody was wondering, okay, Jalen Hurts, we know that, you know, he has played at an MVP level all season, but he suffered that shoulder injury against the Bears at Soldier Field in the fridge attempts that you just mentioned. And he had been dealing with the shoulder injury. He came back in week 18 when the Eagles needed him to clinch home field advantage. And he played okay. They got by against the Giants team, coincidentally enough, that was not playing any starters because they were locked into their playoff position. So the Eagles kind of scratched and clawed their way to a win in that one with Hurts returning to the field, but not really looking like himself. So the question was, well, is Jalen Hurts going to be able to operate like the player he has all season long? And sure enough, very early on, we saw that he was more than capable of doing what he needed to do. Now, whether or not he's truly back to being where he once was, that's certainly debatable. But Nick Sirianni set the tone last night in the press conference, throwing, I'm going to go ahead and say it, quite a bit of hyperbole at his starter quarterback.
I know this is high praise, but to have him out there is like I shouldn't even go there, but like his having like Michael Jordan out there, like he's your leader, he's your guy, he's your, like that's, hopefully that's the biggest respect I can pay to him, comparing to his ability to being on the field to a Michael Jordan type. Like, this guy leads, he brings this calmness to the entire team. He plays great football. He's tough as they come. Yeah, I mean, to me, there ain't nobody has played any better football than him this year.
Michael Jordan, throwing it out there. Your
thoughts? Not a LeBron guy. He settled that one. He's not a LeBron guy. Who's the best of all time? Yeah, that's high praise indeed. Has Jalen ever punched anyone in practice like Michael used to do, just to, you know, get their attention? Who would be
the Steve Kerr on this Philadelphia Eagles roster? That is an interesting question. Not Gardner Minshew. He's got more personality than Kerr did during his playing days. I'm going to continue to look through their roster, but
yeah, Kerr never rocked a mustache like that either.
Yeah, no.
Look what Hurts did in the, you know, coming right out, 7 for 7, 89 yards in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Now, again, the offensive line, you know, kept everyone off him. So God bless him. He and the sprained shoulder wasn't going to be in danger because they had zero pressures, I think, in the first half on him when they were throwing. But, I mean, again, this Eagles team, I don't know, you know, from where you're sitting, what it looks like, but It's going to be, I assume they're going to be a Super Bowl team, and I assume that they're going to give maybe Kansas City all they can handle if they continue to do what they did. Now, the Giants, I can't figure them out, Jeff, and I can't figure Daniel Jones out. Looked really good last week, looked awful last night. What do you do with him if you're Brian Daboll and the Giants? And my old college roommate is a diehard Giants fan, for a lifetime, and I kind of feel for guys like that because – unlike Bears fans, I feel for us because we've lived through not even mediocrity for my lifetime. But once you get in there and then you lay the egg like that, it brings all the questions to the fore. It's like, okay, you got into the playoffs, but which Giants team and which Giants quarterback do you have here? And what do you do with him this offseason? How do you move forward?
No, it's an interesting question that the Giants are going to have to deal with. I think they declined his option in similar fashion to the way the Bears did with Mitch Trubisky because they weren't convinced that he was going to be the starting quarterback. So they certainly didn't want to be on the hook for that. That fifth year option, it's a decent number for most teams. At the same point, you don't necessarily want to commit to that number if you're not sure that he's the guy or even close to that. And that's where the Giants were at before Brian Daboll had an opportunity to work with him. I think what you see is that Daboll, more than anything else, puts quarterbacks in position to succeed. He did that with Josh Allen. He helped develop him in Buffalo. And now that he's gotten an opportunity to work with Daniel Jones for one season, he looks like he's unlocked the potential that Daniel Jones has. But then to your point, he kind of reverts back to the guy that a lot of people were concerned he was for the long term. What I will say is, though, and they mentioned it on the broadcast last night, Joe Davis and Daryl Johnston on Fox, is that there was that one play where he was in the pocket and it was later in the game, it would have been third or fourth quarter, and he was rolling out and he just completely lost awareness of the clock in his head, right? I'm trying to remember which Eagles pass rusher they've got five ridiculous, guys who can get to you. Yeah. It might have been Brandon Graham, who ended up coming from the blind side behind him after he had rolled out of the pocket. And that was something that Daniel Jones had done so often in previous years that it was comical. It was like, you can't be an NFL quarterback and not recognize that you don't have, you don't have that much time to operate in the pocket. You need to know that at a certain point. He kind of reverted back to that. What I will say is, like, when you put him in position like they did last week against the Vikings to, play from a positive game script, when you can rely on your run game and you're not chasing the game, I think he can be, a solid quarterback. The problem is, of course, when you get into a position where you need him to bring you back, I don't know if that's ever going to be something that Daniel Jones excels at. In fact, I would probably say I highly doubt it. I think for the Giants, it's going to be a matter of, okay, how much money is Daniel Jones looking for and how much are we willing to spend? I think it's probably like a short-term deal for him, right? Like a 2 or 3 year deal.
That tells you all you need to know what they think about the guy. And so then are they looking for a quarterback in the draft? Are they looking for Derek Carr if he gets traded?
I think Derek Carr just ends up being an older version and probably less athletic. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I mean, it's just like, if you're Brian, you got Brian Daboll and he was going to be a Bears coach or he was in the mix. And obviously he chose the Giants over the Bears. That's my reading of it. But I mean, if you're only giving him a 2 year contract to figure it out, then I don't, what do you do within, do you immediately go to the well and get, draft someone this year, even though the quarterback classes and all that. I mean, and now all the talk about where Brady's going to end up if it is Vegas. And conversely, when you're talking about Jalen Hurts, isn't that what Justin Fields has to aspire to be?
No doubt. Yes, absolutely. That is the perfect player, the perfect comp, the guy you look at in the league, his skill set, where you say, okay, this is what the Bears should try and do. Now, and I thought about this too, and maybe, like, I don't want to get too far into it because I do want to expound on what the Eagles have done, because I was also texting with Sylvie and Waddle a little bit last night. And I do think, because Sylvie finally this week came around and gave a little bit of praise and love for Daniel Jones, because he's been, a non-believer for the longest time. And then after his game against the Vikings, he said, this week, I think actually on Friday, he was like, I guess you got to give him a little bit of credit for turning things around. I do think if you just flipped Daniel Jones and Jalen Hurts and the roster they're on, I'm not sure that the result would have been drastically different. Now, I do think Hurts is, you know, I do think Hurts is better than Daniel Jones, but I think Jones has a similar skill set. And the problem for Daniel Jones is that when you look at the Eagles roster versus the Giants roster, position by position, almost in every facet, you would take the Eagles player over the Giants player on almost offense and defense. And so I think the problem was they were outmanned, overmatched in that game last night. And so it looked like a disaster for him because they just didn't have the skill set to match up with the Eagles last night.
I can't argue with anything you just said, but it at some point you got to be, if you're the franchise quarterback or you're going to be an elite quarterback, it has to look better than that no matter what's going on around you.
There's no doubt about it. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. We'll continue to discuss yesterday's action, talk a little bit about the Bears as well. I do want to explore what the Eagles have, how they've built their roster, and the blueprint that the Bears should follow, which is theirs. We'll talk about that next here on ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Meller and Hanley on ESPN 1000. You can watch us on Twitch today and every day. Twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. You can also listen on ESPN 1000 100.3 HD2 or the ESPN Chicago app. 312-332-3776 if you want to jump in and talk about yesterday's games. You have some thoughts on the action today, or of course, we're always your home for Bears conversation as well. Now, Jay is in Homewood. He wanted to weigh in, Brian, on something we were talking about a little bit last segment, Daniel Jones versus Jalen Hurts. Jay, you're now, on with Meller and Hanley. What's going on, man?
Now, Jeff, I love you, man, but when you said you can pluck out Jalen Hurts and put in Daniels, that threw me. I had to stop my car, man, and call in. I love you, Jeff.
I think I caught Bry off guard, too, Jay.
You can make that statement, man. I mean, come on.
JJ, I'm not saying that. JJ, hold on, though. I just want to clarify, though. Hold on. I'll let you keep talking, but hold on. I'm just saying, yes, Jalen Hurts is a better player, but I think we've seen enough from Daniel Jones this year where if he had the skill position players, the offensive line in front of him that Hurts has, like, that was the true mismatch in yesterday's game. We didn't get to see Daniel Jones operate in a position where, when Hurts has been fortunate, Jay, he hasn't had to bring the Eagles back much this year. They've been dominating every time they step on the field.
I do understand part of that. It's just sometimes, and I don't want to mix apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. It's just that when we look at the criticism, stay with me here because I'm making the connection. We look at the criticism that was put forth towards Fields. Mm-hmm. And how certain people, not all, but certain people were ready to jump ship, so to speak, of a sample size that was less than 2 years, significantly less than 2 years. But then you look at a fan base in New York, how they stuck with their guy. Daniel Jones, he had his record was, I think, 5-9, 4-7, and 9, and, well, let me get it right. Let me just say this. if you look at his record, he was 3-9, 5-9, 4-7, and this year he was 9-6. The fact that New York stuck with him, and I ask why, and how certain people in Chicago were willing to let go of a very small sample size that we had with Fields. And so sometimes I think we make comments and we don't realize how certain people can perceive some of the statements. And it's just how certain players are judged differently for different reasons. And of course, you all can draw your own conclusions. And I don't think it's intentional, mm-hmm. but when you look at the body of work and you'd be like, huh? And it's fascinating to see. And that's why there's a need for the Rooney Rule. That's why there's a need, because you have to have people outside of the good old boy system to weigh in on certain things and say, did you think about that? Because sometimes when we rubber stamp things and everybody has similar views and backgrounds and ideas, they don't mean to say certain things or see things a certain way, but that's why you have to have people with different views to come in and say, think about that real quick. And when you have that, you have an organization or a system that works, but you have to have a difference of thought. Because if not, we get caught up in our monolithic kind of view, and it can be unintentional.
Jay, no, listen. Jay, I agree with everything you just said there. There's no doubt for the longest time, you know, and Brian's been, you know, covering sports for, you know, I learned a lot about sports through reading Brian and listening to Brian for many years. And so he can talk about this as well. But you're absolutely right. I do think we've seen some progress, quite significant progress over the last 20 or so years, you know, to the point where you can look around the league and see lots of black quarterbacks excelling like they probably should have been for plenty of years. But you're right. There still is, for amongst some people, a double standard that shouldn't truly exist. I agree with all of that, Jay. I guess back to my point, though, I do think Daniel Jones can be a starting quarterback at a high level in this league. He's not, he's not, in my opinion, as good as Jalen Hurts, but I think if he was surrounded and working with the same talent that Jalen Hurts has, I think if you flip the quarterbacks yesterday, I think the Eagles still win that game if Daniel Jones is their starting quarterback and Jalen Hurts is the starting quarterback of the Giants.
Ooh, I mean, I do believe that Daniels, he will be a quality quarterback. Mm-hmm. But I just think to flip it and say that they're going to garner 38 points, I just don't.
But, Jay, that's not what I said, though. Again, I said Hurts is better, but I think the difference is the Eagles win that game 38-7. I think if you flip the quarterbacks and Daniel Jones is the starter of the Eagles and Hurts is the starter of the Giants, maybe it's 31-14. Maybe it's 28-17. But well, I think the Eagles are a significantly better team.
Let me ask you this. If you flip quarterbacks, are the Eagles going to win a Super Bowl, Daniel Jones? And will the Giants win one with Jalen Hurts?
No, Giants are not winning one with either, I think, Jalen Hurts or Daniel Jones.
Well, I mean, if you move forward, if you take Jalen Hurts and say, that's my quarterback and here's Brian Daboll, they're going to win a Super Bowl eventually. I don't know when that is. As we sit here today, Daniel Jones is never going to win a Super Bowl. He's just not, okay? He might be a very good quarterback, and he might get you in the playoffs every now and then or maybe every couple of years. That's not that guy. He's not that guy. Jalen Hurts is that guy.
Just good enough to get you beat. See, yeah. I guess I haven't come to that complete conclusion just yet. Again, I'll go back to, I think, like, Howie Roseman deserves a lot of credit for putting the Eagles in the spot where they're at right
Absolutely.
Now. You know, like, consider, it's interesting. We played the highlights at the start of the show, Bri. You hear Joe Davis talking about, you know, the Eagles are going back to the NFC title games, you know, and it hasn't been, they haven't been there since when they won the Super Bowl. And I'm like, that was 2017. You know, like, what do you, like,
yeah, I know,
like, it's
right?
ancient
yeah.
history
yeah.
or something.
Right.
Meanwhile, you're just thinking,
are you
okay.
kidding me?
What the interesting thing about it is the way they've overhauled their roster, right? Like, for the most part, the only real significant pieces still on their roster from that team that won when Nick Foles was their starting quarterback are basically Fletcher Cox and Lane Johnson. Those are the two significant pieces left.
They overhauled everything.
Yes.
The coaching staff, the roster. But I mean, to the quarterback conversation, mm-hmm. I mean, Jalen Hurts is a top 10 in almost every passing category, and he ran for almost 800 yards this year. And he missed a couple games because of the sprained shoulder. I mean, we know that Justin Fields can run. You know, he got to 1,000 yards. We need to see him be a guy who can be top 10 in many, if not most, of the passing categories. And I'd love to sit here today and say, I know that's going to happen. I don't know if that's going to happen. It's certainly possible, and I'm not jumping ship on Justin Fields. But, you know, like our caller just said, you got to give more of a sample size and you have to give more around. But yeah, that's what Justin Fields has to aspire to be. And that's what certainly Ryan Poles has to be able to figure out by putting things around him, just like the Eagles have done with Jalen Hurts.
No, absolutely. You know what? It's a perfect opportunity here since we're discussing it. Field Yates was on with Waddle and Sylvie on Friday, and he was talking about Justin Fields, and the Fields-Hurts comparison came to Fields' mind.
Sometimes it's easy to just make these low-hanging fruit comparisons, but obviously Justin's growth in year two reminded some people of Jalen Hurts' growth in year two. Look what happened to Jalen Hurts in year three. I know that A.J. Brown was added, and that was a big reason why he took a step forward. But also Jalen, just his determination to become a better player from the pocket really helped. And I think that while Justin's legs are always going to be extremely, extremely dangerous to opposing defense, where I think he gets even better in future years is he'll run, no doubt about that. but he can also beat you from the pocket. And at that point, when you're a defense facing a quarterback like Jalen Hurts, where he's at right now, and like where maybe Justin Fields can be by next season or shortly thereafter, your best game plan defensively might just be divine intervention.
Interesting to hear Field Yates talk about Hurts and Fields. And it is. It's the what you look at across the league, what blueprint the Bears should follow. The Eagles are the one. Now, can it be replicated? That's the question. The good news, at least so far, things can certainly change over the next month or so, but Ian Cunningham, who knows, who helped Howie Roseman build up that roster because he was in Philadelphia before he came to be Ryan Poles' right-hand man here in Chicago, even though he's garnered, you know, a couple of looks so far in the interviewing process to become a GM, he has not secured a GM position just yet. So maybe, just maybe, the Bears will be able to hold on to him for one more season. And I do think that would be a very fortunate thing for them, because I like the fact that Ian Cunningham was there and saw Howie Roseman, how he went about building up this roster. And so to be there with Ryan Poles, I think, will be a huge benefit. But again, Field had on a couple things too. Jalen Hurts, Brian, the work he did this past offseason to help make himself a better, more accurate passer in the middle range of the field was tremendous. And he really did do a good job of, that's something I never knew he was going to become as as a passer. That was always my concern, was the accuracy. I knew he could run. I knew he could throw deep. I knew he had that arm, I knew he had a cannon. Yeah. The question was, could he be accurate enough as a passer? And I think Nick Sirianni, he deserves a lot of credit too, because he's put him in an offense where he can go through his progressions quickly and, find the open guy in the middle of the field. And now he's finally been this season more accurate than he ever was.
Yeah, and that's what we still need to see from Justin and maybe Luke Getsy, drawing that out of him, because we've seen him rush through his progression. We've seen him decide to run, even though he's got time in the pocket. All that stuff has to come together, and it has to come together rather quickly.
The encouraging thing, I think, is there's been moments where we've seen Justin at times, especially later in the season, before the weather got really ridiculous at points, where he would, go through progression. There were moments where it looked like he was actually getting better. So I don't think Justin Fields will not reach his potential because he's not willing to work. That's the one thing, no matter what, I'm convinced of. I've been sold on him. And that's why I do think we can continue to talk about, and we will for a long time, about what the Bears should do with the first round pick. His work ethic is something that I don't question in any way.
He checks every intangible: leadership, effort, want to. I've got no questions on any of that part of the makeup. Now we just need to see the football development in terms of passing.
That's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
I think the world of him. I think he's awesome. I think he is one of the greatest things that has happened to the NFL this season. And I think that if you don't think that a big driving force behind what took place this year is a player's work ethic, then I think you're kind of just missing the boat on Justin Fields. So if we learned nothing else from Justin Fields, we know that he cares a ton about being a winning football player, even if the wins were hard to come by this year. He cares about being great, and he took major strides towards that greatness.
A little more from Field Yates there on Waddle and Sylvia on Friday, reemphasizing just what we were talking about there last segment. Meller and Hanley with you on ESPN 1000 up until 11 o'clock. Teddy Greenstein is going to join us around 10:30 today to give you all the latest information you need for today's games, what you need to be aware of as the line movement comes in, what the Sharps are doing, what the Joes are doing. The pros versus Joes, as they like to say there, Bri. But interesting from Field Yates there on Friday with Waddle and Sylvie. And I always, too, perk up and listen a little more carefully when Field Yates says something, because for those who are unaware, Field Yates got his start inside the Kansas City. Well, he didn't get his start. Was it with the Chiefs? I'm trying to remember. He started with the Patriots and then moved to the Chiefs when Scott Pioli went there. And the man who was amongst his intern class, of course, was the one and only Ryan Poles, who is, of course, the general manager of the Bears. So when Field Yates speaks about the way the Bears feel about someone like, you know, Justin Fields, I tend to perk up just a little bit more and put a little more stock into what he's saying.
And absolutely you should for those reasons. And, you know, one thing about a couple things about Justin Fields, and I think we're all in agreement that the want to, the makeup, the work, he's going to work as hard as he needs to. You know, one of the knocks on Mitch Trubisky was not that he didn't put the work in, but that between the ears, the football IQ wasn't ever going to be nearly good enough to be an elite, you know, to reach the heights that obviously Ryan Pace had for him. And that was his limitation. You know, the offense, you couldn't just keep putting stuff on his plate because he really couldn't digest it. And when you get to that point in your career and you're in the NFL, I don't think that changes. I think Justin Fields is a much more intelligent quarterback than we had in Mitch Trubisky. And that's why I think people still believe the ceiling is very high for hopefully, well, what is a franchise quarterback here.
Yeah. No, the learning curve for Justin Fields, you know, or and probably as it is for someone like, you look at the other game too, Trevor Lawrence playing, who took, you know, playing his college games at Clemson, where there's such a huge talent disparity amongst your players versus the guys you're lining up against every Saturday. And oh, by the way, Trevor Lawrence no longer undefeated on Saturdays. But, you know, that's the learning curve for someone like Lawrence or Justin Fields. It's that, hey, you know, I need to figure out how to maybe throw guys open, because when I was in college, I knew that my receivers with 4.3, you know, 4.2 speed, yeah, were going to beat the cornerbacks who were running 4.5s, yeah, trying to cover them.
Yeah, they were in a different zip code and from the cornerbacks, yeah.
And I knew the line could give me enough time to allow him to beat the DB who was covering him. So there would be just, okay, you just need to wait till he gets open, then you can throw to him. That's the learning curve for Justin Fields. It's not the ability to read the field. And so that's the transition I think we're waiting for him to make. But, you know, back to, again, Jalen Hurts and what he showed us last night, I do think that when you look at what Hurts brings to the table, it's not exactly the same, but you look at when a healthy Patrick Mahomes, you know, what he can do, the mobility outside of the pocket, how that changes a defense. There's nothing that will drive a defense more crazy than having, you know, your lockdown coverage in the secondary, ready to go, holding it down for four good seconds, and then all of a sudden the quarterback breaks the pocket, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, the jailbreak rules are in play, and then you don't know, do you have to leave your man to try and cover him because he's going to be breaking the line of scrimmage, or is he just waiting for you to make that one, you know, ill-fated move where you start to show that you're going in towards, and then he's just going to loft it right over your head. The quarterbacks who pose that threat, which Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, we're going to see Josh Allen do it today. You know, those guys are, in this era of football, the most impossible, you know, to defend. It's, if you have one of those guys, you're playing a different type of football than most teams who don't have that guy.
Yeah, and we talked about it last week, last Sunday. You know, how do you upgrade the wide receiver position here with the Bears if you're Ryan Poles? Because the free agent list is not all that impressive. And we talked about how in Jacksonville they took what people thought was more than a leap. They thought they made a crazy move in getting Kirk, and it's worked out just fine for them. But that Ryan Poles has to do something. Guys like Equanimeous, St. Brown, you know, people like, oh, he could be a solid number two next year. Pro Football Focus had him among the top 10 worst rated, you know, they graded out the offensive players, and he was like five. And, you know, God bless him, he is who he is. He's not a one or two. I mean, he could be a three, but you if you're Ryan Poles, you got to find something to give Justin Fields that opportunity to make that leap this year, right? And it's going to take some creative thinking as the Bears GM as he heads into this offseason.
Yeah, this is too where I feel like we're still, you know, Field Yates talked about, you know, making that leap for Justin Fields, you know, and maybe he could do what Jalen Hurts has done in year two to year three. I think the problem is the roster for the Eagles was already in a better position than where this Bears. We've talked about it a lot on this station, that there are so many holes everywhere for the Bears that they need to get better at, that I don't anticipate we're going to see a year two to three leap from Justin Fields that we saw from Jalen Hurts this year, just because it's going to take a little bit more time. You know, though, you're right, the wide receiver position needs to be upgraded. And honestly, I think even you know, casting St. Brown as a three is, you know, you might do it next year just to help you get by, right. But I think that's even kind of generous. I think in the ideal situation, he's your fourth or fifth receiver, right? And then that way you can rely on him in different sets as a good blocker, a good run blocker, but you don't have to ask him to be a game breaker. And if someone gets hurt, if he's your number three, you're not asking him to step in to be the number two role, a starter on the roster, because he's just not that level of player.
Amen.
And so that's what, but you've got lots and lots of holes. We've all talked about. And on the offensive line, you know, Tevin Jenkins, outside of, you know, a few games this year when he was healthy, where he did show that mean streak, looked like he could be a building block. But the reality is he hasn't played enough for you to be convinced of that. Braxton Jones is a nice story, played every snap for the Bears, but I don't think, I'm not convinced he's a championship caliber left tackle. He might be a nice swing tackle.
I'm with you. I hope Jesse Rogers isn't listening to this. He's got a man crush on him. And I, you know, he's a great guy, and you said a great story. But if you can't upgrade the left tackle position, you're not trying. I mean, that's, you know, as much as Braxton's done and worked at it and made himself into a piece that's a dependable piece, you have to upgrade. You have to upgrade. And you're right, Tevin Jenkins, I mean, Pace was the only GM in the league who envisioned him as a left tackle, and now he's a right guard. And I'm with you. You haven't seen enough. You've seen flashes and when healthy, but he hasn't been healthy, so who knows? But it's you've got to, you know, you have to redraft some positions, and you have to, the whole list of the to-do list is immense, and it's not one off-season list. It's a multiple-season list.
No, absolutely. And then, you know, so those two players are the glimmers of hope on the current offensive line. But again, they're not by any means, you know, somebody that you can say for sure are locked in pieces. And the rest of it needs a complete overhaul in all reality. So you're almost talking about 3/5 minimum that the offensive line can use a huge upgrade at. And then the front seven, in particular, your defensive line, which the Eagles showed you last night, was a huge difference maker. The Eagles had 70 sacks this season, 15 more than the next closest team in the league. They were dominant, right? So for all the talk about Jalen Hurts and can Justin Fields follow that path, the reality is the Eagles on the offensive line and the defensive line are so much farther ahead than where the Bears are currently at.
And I would love to hear from Bears fans, because, you know, we're starting to see mock drafts come out and everyone's got one, and it, you know, it's all opinion. Mm-hmm. But if that, so, you know, much spoken or written about a trade with the Colts doesn't materialize and Poles is going to utilize that first overall pick, a lot of people have him going a defensive lineman and a guy who can get to the quarterback. And if we're sitting here spending the last half hour talking about Justin Fields, as we should, because it's all about the quarterback, then you make an argument that he should be on the offensive side of the ball as bad as the defense was. And that's because Poles made it, you know, traded away your legit guys to help accelerate the rebuild. But if you take that first overall pick, is it a hands-down slam dunk that you're going defensive lineman? Or do you have other thoughts if you're a Bears fan?
He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller here on ESPN 1000. Up next, the Bears introduced their new team president this week. He joined Carmen and Yurko. A lot of interesting things to say. We'll share some of that with you in 2 short minutes.